Welcome to Mind Bully. I'm so excited you're here for the first ever episode. I'm so thankful to have a platform to share my ideas, my thoughts, and how I am as a person with you all. I feel like whenever we have a creative space to be ourselves, it really brings values to not only myself, but to others just like me. So what is a mind bully? Bully is a buzzword because when you think bully, you think physical, but I believe everybody has them two voices in their minds, the positive and the negative. The negative, usually for some people, is overbearing and kind of squashing the positive voice. So whenever you have an idea that you think is great or you got a job that you think that, oh, this is the next step in my career or an opportunity that can propel you forward, that bully gets louder and louder telling you can't do it. You'll never be that. You'll never get to that stage, and it's the duality of having that positive and that negative mindset. Kind of the underdog story, the David versus Goliath, the little voice that everybody has that's holding them back from their true destiny. And I believe this is a platform where I can express how I feel, the things that I go through, the things that can also bring value to other people to impact lives. I feel that I've always felt this way, that you don't need credentials to be positive. All of us who are breathing is still on a journey of life. So if you're on a journey, you could bring some value to somebody else's journey, which is honestly the main reason why I started this podcast. I've been blessed to be around a lot of great people in my life, from my teachers to my coaches to my friends to my parents. People that have aspirations to be something greater than they were themselves in their journey, and me just learning and taking feedback from these people, it's a constant, a consistent factor that made them get from point A to point B, and it always started in the mind. And that got me thinking, because in my mind, in my life, in my situations, in my circumstances, it's the same, and I believe it's the same for all of us. It's that positive mindset that you have now or the negative mindset that you have now will make up the rest of your life or make up the next opportunity that you have. So that's why this podcast was essential for me, not only for myself, but I know that there's somebody out there willing and wanting to tap into their true potential. And I know everybody says that all the time, but really wanting to tap into the next them, the next you. And I believe this podcast is the platform to bring you that push to get you to step into who you need to be. So, mind bully. Big college career. I went to the University of, nobody says that. I went to Texas Tech University. Went in 2014 with the Fab Five, as we call it. The Justin Gray, Zach Smith, Keenan Evans, Norris Odiase. I won't say the last name I won't say the last name, but we came in with a strong freshman class that little did we know that would change kind of the face and the landscape of Texas Tech athletics. So I was privileged to come in with those guys and learn a lot from Tubby Smith, the system that we had. And it was fun, man. I had 5 years at Tech because little did I know that God blessed me with two flat feet, and I broke my feet. Did you say feet or foot? I broke my feet in the same place, fourth metatarsal on both feet. So my sophomore year, I came down. Literally, I'm from Fort Worth, Texas, Funky Town, stand up. They know what time it is, 817. But, yeah, I played a game against TCU, at TCU, whole family. Let me set the stage. Family's there, friends are there. I'm making tickets for not even my friends, but you know them people that were in your high school. They're like, hey, I knew you was gonna be something, boy. And I got them tickets too. So the whole city was out for the kid. That was cool. I was amped, ready to play the game. I'm in the game. I'm playing well, and I come down from a rebound, and literally it sounded like a clap. I came down. I was like, what was that? There was nothing on the court, but my foot. So I'm like, what made that sound? And as I keep running, I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ, something's wrong. And so I played through it for the next two possessions, and I'm like, I can't do this. Something's in my shoe. Like, I thought there was something in my shoe that was hindering me from moving. I've never broke a bone in my body to this point. I have no idea what's going on. So I walk over to Big Head Little Chris, my boy, the athletic trainer, and he was just like, let's get you back to the back to get you x-rayed. I found out I broke my foot. Fast forward a couple of years later, I get a new coach in a new practice, ready for the season. The exact same thing happens on my right foot. And this time, I wasn't calm thinking that there was something in my shoe. I was cussing, throwing chairs. I'm like, damn, like, this happened again. Like, woe is me, is how I would say it, because I'm trying to keep it PG on here. But they might see the real no in a second. But nah, I was going crazy because I knew, like, Jesus Christ, that rehab is going to be crazy. So I broke my foot, broke it again. So that happened. From that moment, I changed kind of the landscape of my career, I would say, because from those two injuries, my teammates would, oh my God, they would say, you came in as a big, fluffy freshman who were just standing, sitting at the block, wanting the ball, and I got the ball because Tubby was, you know, they gave it inside. But from that moment, I went from basically that journey, I went from 300 pounds to 245. And how does that happen when you've broken 2 feet? I kind of just locked in. Like, I had a different mindset. I went from feeling sorry for myself, from playing in front of my family to on crutches, mad that I didn't get to perform at my best, to, nah, nobody's coming to save you, bro. Like, this is making you who you need to be. You just don't know it yet. This process, this mindset, this kind of blessing in the skies is going to make you a better player, a better person, and tweak your mindset in a way that I can overcome anything, because literally when I can't walk, I can get better at something that will help me to my game. So every morning I would get up early. I would get up at like 6 a.m. And I was on these little scooters. They gave me like one of them leg scooters. And so I would go to the gym and steal one of those. There's like a sore necks, like an ab wheel, basically. I stole it, got back to my house, took those. I used to do those like they were like playing video games for me. And it was something that was so hard at first that became like part of my routine. So I would do those every morning, every day. I cut out every sugary drink, no Gatorade, no nothing. It was all water. And I would drink 2 bottles of water every class. So I was like the pissing champion for like 2 years because I was pissing every second. But it was kind of filling that void of flushing out bad fluids with water. And it made me feel better. It made me just, it made life better. Water made life better. And also, I needed a vice. My vice for sugar was like green apples. So I'd have like 10 green apples in my bag and like 40 waters. And they would think like I'm going to the elementary school to give it to kids. But it's like literally this is what I ate. Like chicken salads, water, and apples for like 2 years straight. I was able to shed weight. I would do that in the house. Literally the ab wheel. I would get the battle ropes and do it for hours until the weight just dropped. It was because I shifted that from I'm feeling sorry for myself, I can't play, to nah, I got to get better. These guys are getting better. The Fab Five, the group I got in with, they're getting better. So why can't I get better? And I shifted that. And from that day, it's made me a stronger willed person through what I've been through. I say this to say you never know the opportunity you have, even through failure at the point. You think you failed, you think you're down, but what are you learning? Who are you becoming? If you tweak your mindset, you can squash that bully in that instant. You're becoming someone bigger than who you even thought you would be. I never thought I would be a Greek god. If you see me now, like you're like, Jesus, this guy's blessed. And nobody would have thought I would have looked like this because of where I came from. It's just the mindset. Once you shift your mindset, it's endless, endless possibilities. So that was my college career. We ended up going to the Final Four, the final Monday, the final two quarters into overtime. we ran out of time, but yeah, it's, you can see it's actually still a sore subject because Norris doesn't want to keep going deep into that. That would probably be something good to talk about, but nah. But that, the lessons I learned with those group, that group of guys, the family, the atmosphere, it's second to none, honestly. We still talk to this day. Those guys, that team, I was the captain of that team, and I was able to step into a different type of leadership role that also has enhanced my mindset. It's whenever you have a group of guys who are on the one accord of accomplishing something, kind of like me, wanting to have a group of people, a community that's on one accord with me into stepping into their destiny, stepping into a new becoming themselves with this podcast, great things can happen. So this is my final four group. You guys are part of my new final four group. And hopefully this time we're not running out of time. So, nah, that was it. That was my college experience. It was amazing. I love Texas Tech. I love Lubbock. So if anybody wants to keep talking about Lubbock, who's never been to Lubbock, they can come see me because I take that personal. Like, that is a part of my, it sounds cheesy, but heart, literally. Like, it's part of me. So, yeah. Okay, so you guys heard about some of the adversity I went through in college. I'm in a space where I'm a professional basketball player, professional athlete, and since college, I played for the Suns G League, and last year, the trying year for everybody. Obviously, this pandemic has been tragic in many more ways than one, but I was actually blessed with the opportunity to go across the water and go to little old Deutschland, to Germany. I went to Bamberg, and Bamberg is a city where, you know, if you have a girlfriend, you have a wife, you take them to, it looks like Disneyland. Like, there's a lot of kind of trendy, beautiful places to go. Like, it's kind of on the water too. It's beautiful, kind of quieter, nice place. I had a great setup. It was a blessing the first month. Well, the whole time, but we'll get into that. The first month, literally, like, it was amazing. I went, I had like a 3-story house, nice living. It's like the States, modern. People are nice. Beautiful people. I would go there, and I actually, thinking about Germany, I always thought Berlin would be nice to go to. Bamberg, I'm thinking it's Berlin. What kind of idiot is that? But actually, Berlin is not that far. It's like 2-3 hours away. So literally, like, the first day I was there, one of my teammates is from Berlin. I don't even know this guy's name yet. I just heard Berlin. I said, whoa, can we go? Like, can I go to your house? And luckily, this guy is legit. Yo, Anik, shout out to you, bro. He literally was like, yeah, like, cool. And so we went the next day. I drove with him to his house, stayed with his family. They were lovely. Like, it was love. And me and Yo Anik went out that night, and it was crazy. Like, in Berlin, they stay up until like 6 a.m. And we went to this nightclub called Pearl. Literally every type of culture, every type of music. We had a table, like, I'm going to put him out there. He left early at like literally like 10 because he was, you know, he couldn't hang with the fellas. And I was, so picture me, I'm in a country for the first time. No one speaks English but Yo Anik and some of his friends. And I'm just in there just mumbling the words to random songs and having a blast. Like, I'm not like one of those people where, oh, I got to be comfortable around my friends. Like, I don't know these people. And I'm having like the time of my life. Like, it was so it was so much vibes. And so the next day I left and I'm telling all my boys back home, like, boy, y'all missing out. This Germany, y'all in that pandemic. We outside. So I'm lit. Like, I was having a blast. Aside from that, in the basketball piece, my agent would text me every day and he was just like, man, they love you. Like, we're getting good feedback. You're in early. You're leaving late. We had practice at actually 10 a.m. and I would get up. I'd be there by 8. I'd be there by 8. I'd get up at 6 and be there by 8 just warming up, working. And we had practice from 10 to 12. And then we'd have another practice actually from 3 to 6 where it's weights and shooting. And I'll be there and stay late doing individuals. and I'd get back and sleep by 10. So, cause I wanted, I was on a mission. I'm a planner by nature, routine by nature. So I was on a mission to get to greater heights, to become a better player and to show them I'm about my business. So that's how I was the first month. I was getting after it. Little did I know the second month would change the landscape, honestly, of my life. The second month, we're in Bamberg. To unpack Bamberg, the team actually is, I'm blessed. Like, it was a prestigious club. It is a prestigious club, like one of those clubs to, let's say, the LA Lakers of Germany, like one of those type clubs. Big time fan base, big time funding, big time pressure. And we had a new head coach, a new whole staff. So he was kind of feeling that pressure. Obviously, with me being out and we'd play some preseason games, I think we'd lost like two in a row. And actually, I didn't even tell why I was out. I was out after my first month. In one of the preseason games, I tore my hamstring. I came down. And they said I'd be out like 6 to 8 weeks. And he was like, obviously, he was frustrated. And so we go on to lose two more, and the wheels kind of fall off. So how this happens, the coach in Germany, it's a different kind of dynamic. When you're the coach over there, you're basically the coach and the GM. So that's kind of a sticky situation. So it's like you don't want to get on their bad side because they hold the cards really to your career almost. So when this happens, he's feeling all the pressure, obviously, being a new coach, being a new GM there. And he's basically what my agent calls looking for the weakest link. So, mind you, it was great feedback month one. He's coming in early. He's leaving late. He's working. He's playing well. The second month, I'm hurt. And he's just trying to find the weakest link. So, I played with his name's Mickey. He was an Italian national team captain. So, I mean, that's prestige in itself. And long story short, we were in a film session, and he's coming after him over, I think somebody had scored, and Mickey was like, that wasn't my guy. And he just went on, like, you cocksucker, like crazy. And me coming from college, like, coming from the States, I'm like, I've heard some things like that, but everybody was like, this doesn't happen. You don't say that. Like, and it makes sense. There's grown man family, like national team camp. You don't say this. He rewinds the tape and it's like Mickey was right. And he's still going off, like saying crazy stuff. I don't want to get into what he was saying, but I mean, he was lighting them up. That was one day, and practice was hell after that. I'm watching the guys. The next day, we actually had a preseason game. One of our captains, actually, David, he was one of the bigs. After the game, we lost the preseason game, and he's in the locker room just lighting him up. He's like, and I told your agent I didn't want you. I told you you're soft. People, you want to see the text saying personal stuff, showing the team like texts, like we don't want him. He's paying to like personal information in front of everybody. Like, I'm like, I've never seen this public display of just disrespect on this level in front of people. And David was just like taking it. And it was crazy. Like, and for me saying this, I'm downplaying it right now. Like it was that type of moment. And so I'm rehabbing. I'm still coming in early, trying to get back. And 2 weeks go by. And I'm hearing like he's getting more frustrated. And so I'm just like, man, forget it. I'm going to try to go. Mind you, I tore my hamstring. It's 6 to 8 weeks. This is week two. And I'm coming to practice thinking like, hey, I'm going to give it a go. So before practice, I'd already texted the coach the night before because he's kind of, you know, that unheard of pressure. If you're an athlete, it hurt. There's an untalked about pressure that is placed on you. It's like, take your time, but you better be ready to play type. Like, so I'm like, okay, I read between the lines. I'm ready to practice that day. So I get there early, like early, wrapped up my hamstring as if that was going to help. Got it warmed up. And before practice, he's like, yeah, we're going to ease you in, get you into some 5-on-0, see what you can do. And I'm like, all right, cool. Practice starts. Literally, the first drill. We did this drill. Obviously, I play 4-5. So I go set a screen. I set a screen and I plant with 2 feet. Basically, a screen is you jump. Basically, you jump and you stick the landing. I stick it and it hurts so bad. And so I run back, like kind of jog back. And he stops the whole drill. He's like, is that setting this? Like going crazy. Is that how you set a screen? Blah, blah. And I'm looking at him like, bro, this guy still know that my hamstring's torn? Like, or maybe he's just playing this kind of mind game. Let's see how it works. So practice goes on and he's just like making comments about how I'm running, how I'm moving, like quicker, like going at me, like, and I'm just like, all right, maybe he's just pushing me. Okay, so the team, something happens in practice and the team, he's like, on the line, we're about to run. And so I look over at the trainer and he's just like, nah, don't, like, sit on the side and do push-ups. So I'm about to get doing push-ups. He stops. He's like, why are you looking at him for? I'm the big dog. I call all the shots. You gonna listen to me. Don't look at him type, like. But he was, you know, he was adding some more colorful language to that. And I'm just like, all right. And so I keep doing the push-ups. And he's just, after the drill, he's just like, you two. He said something, he's Dutch. He said something in Dutch. And he was like, you're energy vampires. Don't talk to him the rest of the practice. And then and at this point, like, I'm not going to lie. I'm not fazed by what people say. So he's screaming at me, yelling, spitting, cursing, everything, like flailing, trying to make a scene. And I'm just staring at him dead in his eyes like, all right, I got you. Like, all right, got you. And he's coming up to me and like, we're face to face now. He's screaming like, blah, 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 like just, and I'm just looking at him and he says, stop looking at me. And I'm like, is he for real? And I'm still looking at him dead in his eyes. He says, stop looking at me. And I start looking at the floor and I'm like, this is the craziest thing I've ever heard. Cause in that moment, I'm like, this guy is one, he's delusional, and two, he's intimidated by someone just staring at him. And so I'm just looking at the floor thinking how crazy this is. I have a torn hamstring, I'm playing through pain, I'm working to try to be here for my teammates, and I have this coach who's just trying to fester out who's the weakest link, basically, so he can get somebody in to fill that spot. And I'm just like, I'm not having it. So after the practice, everybody's coming up to me and they're like, bro, I don't know how. I've never heard a coach say, stop looking at you. Like, that's the ultimate sign of respect, staring at him while he's saying the craziest things to you. And I'm like, yeah, I can handle it, whatever. And like I said, we had 2 practices. The next practice at 3, it's kind of a weights and then shooting. After shooting, I go up to him and I say, hey, man, like I don't need a battery under my back. You know I come in all the time. Ask your guys. I come in, I work. I'm not, basically, I'm like, I know what you're trying to do. I'm not that guy. I'm not the weakest link. Like, I'm solid. I'm still going to push through it. He's like, yeah. I said, I literally told him, I said, ask each and every one of your staff who's the hardest working, they'll say me. He said, honestly, I'll agree. Like, you work too hard. I think you need to tail it back. I'm like, here's a guy who wanted me to push through something. Now he's like, I work too hard. Then I was like, this guy, we're not connected. Because if you're saying I work too hard and that's what I'm all about, but then you cause a scene in front of the whole team, something is twisted, something is manipulative, something is in you that I don't connect with. I knew that from that day, but I kept going. Okay, so the next day happens. The next day, it's crazy, but it was worse. Okay, so we have, let's say we have 12 guys. And bigs, we have about 4 bigs. And so, okay, so we split the teams up. 2 and 2, basically. Literally, I was the only big on the second team. And there was 3 other bigs on the other team. So mind you, I have a torn hamstring. Again, I'm here 2 weeks early, right? And I'm the only sub. I have no sub the whole practice, the whole two-hour practice, no sub. Intentionally no sub. Like, why else would you have no sub? And so it's like, okay. And the drills we were doing in this practice are the most physical drills you could ever think of, like fighting through screens, fronting the post. Like, okay, so this drill comes, and it's in basketball, you have a cross screen where it's the right block and the left block. Basically, somebody was coming to hit me, as in screen me, and I was supposed to fight through that screen and front my man. My man is, mind you, 7 foot, like 240. So front him. Stop him from getting the ball, basically, after I've been hit, which I'm now at a disadvantage. Okay, so pretty tough drill, normally. It makes the heights even harder now that I have a torn hamstring and can't move, whatever. So I get through it. I'm battling through it. I'm front of the post, and I'm kind of at the mid-post area. He stops the drill. Front the post! He's crazy. Like, front the post, cussing me out. Like, what, you call that a front? And I'm just like, I got you, I got you. I'm telling you, the next time I fronted him, I look at my feet, I'm at the three-point line. The second time around, and he stops it again. And he's like, what kind of front is that? Now you're fouling. And he's cussing. I don't want to curse right now because I could go into a whole different side of this. But it's that type of feel. Again, I'm broken. I have a torn hamstring. I'm fronting this 7 foot, 240-pound guy at the three-point line trying my hardest, and it's still not good enough. So in my head, I'm like, this guy's, he's, for lack of better words, he's picking on me right now. And I'm just like, this is crazy. So I get through it. And I talked to my agent after the practice. He's like, all right, nah, we can't have this. We're not having this. We're not having this. We should, like, basically show him that we're about our business. You can't mess with our players. So the next day, the literal next day, I have two agents. One of my agents comes to practice, and we meet with him. Well, I meet with them, and they meet with him. And my agent was in practice the whole time. Literally, he flipped that switch, and he was complimenting me. It was the most fakest thing ever, and I'm just like, wow. Like, and I couldn't believe it. I said, is this what it takes? Like, my agent has to be like mommy supervising me for you to act like a regular person? And so I'm like, okay. So in the huddle, he kind of said he was like, Norrence didn't bring his skirt today or something like that. And he'd say those little things like, Norrence, we don't wear sunglasses in Europe. Or Norrence, we don't wear do-rags in Europe. And he would just say, like, I'm painting a picture on how this interaction was the whole time. So, okay, the next day. After this third day, I made a point in my mind where I was in so much pain. I would go home limping, pissed off. Like, I had to dive into something I'm not comfortable with. Well, not comfortable with, but not proud of. But, like I said, I'd had two major injuries earlier in my career, and through those injuries, one, I had surgery, and with that surgery came pills that would assist in the pain after the surgery, pills that I'd never taken because after the surgery, I was good, pills that I just randomly still had in the packages that I brought with me to Germany. Pills that looked attractive at this hour because I couldn't walk. I'm dealing with this crazy coach that's pushing me to do things that my body literally shouldn't be able to do. So every day, just to get through those practices, I would take them. I would take them before bed. I would take them before practice. So I would take two at night, two in the mornings. And that's four a day, four hydros, hydrocodone. And every day I would take them, and I'm not proud of this, but just to get that feel, that negative feeling I was getting in my mind. Again, that bully was building in my mind because of the things he was saying. Oh, you're worthless. Oh, you're useless. We can do without you. Oh, if you're in pain, just tell me. You'll sit out. We'll get somebody in. And I was just like, nah, I'll fight through it. So that was the battery charging me to keep playing, because he was like, oh, we'll just get somebody else. Like, and I know what he's trying to do. So I'm like, no, you're not going to mess with my money. You're not going to mess with my career. So I'm playing through all this knowing that I have to. So I would take those pills. And nobody, I've never told anybody this. I would take those pills every day, every single day, just fighting through it. And that bully was kind of building in my head. I go from this fun-loving kid, big energy. Most people that know me, I'm smiling. I'm all about bringing that positive nature to somebody else, to kind of in a shell of myself, just believing everything he's saying. Oh, I'm a terrible player. Oh, I'm worthless. Kind of quiet, not talking to guys. And it's also letting him affect my mindset was letting me affect my mindset. So it's like, again, I'm a person of conviction. Like, no, that's not me. I would look him straight in the eye and like, nah, that's not me, to believe in it. And the part that made it so tough is because normally I've never been into that place because I feel like my family was around. So because of the pandemic and because of the time change, I had no family and no friends. And the second month, again, that shaped this whole career, it was even worse because the pandemic had also hit Germany. So now Germany, the city, Bamberg, that was magical kingdom, is now has a 9 p.m. curfew to where you can't even drive out of your city. So mind you, language barrier, new country, new team, new city. All my teammates have wives. And it's just me in this three-story house that I can't leave. I can't talk to anybody. And it's just like, and now I'm believing something this coach is saying about me. So I'm almost trapped in my own prison. So I go to practice and I'm a shell of myself. I go back home, I'm a shell of myself. The only time that I was connected with people that knew me was my friends for like a couple hours because of the time difference. I would say like 2 hours a day, I would get that reminder of who I was, like just kind of like just reliving Axel Norris through other people. But I didn't feel like Norris. Okay. So I'm going through the season and it gets worse month three because now we're traveling. We go to Spain, we go to Italy, we go to Turkey, and it's those 2 hours with my friends were getting, I had no time off. We're always with the team. We're always around coach. So every day there was no outlook. There was no place to just, I can be Norris. Like I can be myself. It was always me believing what this man was telling me. If I'm worthless today, I'd go to my hotel room and think, man, I'm worthless. If I am replaceable, if I suck, if I'm terrible, if I'm some random Dutch curse word, that's what I associated myself with. And I say this to say, honestly, it's crazy because I shifted now to that was on me. Like normally it's not that I was leaning on people for reassurance in who I was, because I wasn't back home, but it was nice to have that outlook of people that just told you like that's who you were. I didn't have that. So now I'm believing what he's saying, and it's to my detriment because I've always been a mindset guy. I've always been a positive guy, but now I'm influenced by somebody that it's known me for 3 months. And so we get to January. And January comes, and I haven't been playing, like, at all. I'm still, one, injured. Two, the guy hates me, so he doesn't put me in. And when he does put me in, he talks about how I didn't do something right. That wasn't true. I'd still be practicing. He's just like, play like that in the game. I'd literally have a great practice, dunk on somebody. Play like that in the game. You don't put me in the game. Again, let me go back on the tangent because I got some things to say. Again, I had a practice, right? I have one of these practices and I fall down on my head. I get a concussion and I'm upstairs with the athletic trainer. And the athletic trainer, so he's worried about me. I'm bleeding through my nose. And I'm in this place. And he storms upstairs and he's cussing out my trainer because he's just like, you're making it a big deal. He's all right. He's fine. You're all right, right? And in my head, I'm already in this place where I can't think right now. Obviously, I'm concussed. And I'm just like, yeah, I'm good. So the trainer takes me off to the hospital, and he's just like, I can't believe this guy. Through COVID, all the protocols, I stay overnight there, and I go to practice. And again, that was another factor that was changing my whole perspective. Like, it was changing me. It's like, wow. even in my deepest point, I have a torn hamstring. I'm bleeding through my nose. I have a concussion. And damn, I'm believing that I'm worthless. Like, there's nobody here for my aid. It's just me hearing this negative every single day. And it's like the pills kind of aided the pain in my body, but it's almost like it was emboldening the pain in my mind. So I'd go on. The next month was January, after we'd come back from traveling from Spain, Turkey, and Italy. And he texted me. He was just like, "We won't be needing you. You can go home." Like, but obviously they still have to pay me. But I'm like, all right. So I text my agent. And I would say to my fault, but I'm turning down deals because I'm like, nah, I'm going to make it work. I'm the type of guy that's a delusional optimist. Like, I can make the most out of every situation. If I'm down in it, I'm doing it to the end. I don't care if this guy's in the way. I'm going to finish this. At least that was the little bit of nuance I still had in me. So I was kind of going through that. So I was turning down deals, and there was like, he called me, my agent. He was like, "Bamberg, they signed another big." And I was just like, what does that mean for my process? He was just like, "Well, they still have to pay you, so just stay at home for the time being." This time being, it honestly changed my life. I was in the house from January. I would say I spent obviously the holidays alone. So after the holidays, I think from the 2nd to February 15th, I was in the house. Mind you, I'm getting ready. I'm still supposed to prepare. One, I have a torn hamstring, still supposed to stay in shape. The city has a 9 p.m. curfew. I can't leave. I can't access the gym because, obviously, I'm away from the team, and now COVID gives them excuse to lock the gyms on me. So I'm supposed to stay in shape and keep my mind alert to where, oh, if I get another contract from another team, I have to be ready to go. And so every morning, I go from being a planner to a routine guy. Like, I have to do this to get to there. I've always been that. To, I have to really let go, and I have to really let God. Like, I have no, people always say control what you can control. This is the moment where I literally had to just wait. That's the only thing I could control. So I waited. I would actually listen to boxing. I watch boxing. I would shadow box. I'd be in there doing jumping jacks, dribbling the ball, to where my neighbors are cussing me out in different languages, like something to keep my mind alert. And the first few days, I would just break down. So every night, I cried. I cried myself to sleep because it's like, how did I go from loving this place, loving the opportunity, blessed with this opportunity to come across water to play during a trying time, to broken, lost in my mind, losing to myself mentally, losing to myself physically, losing in all aspects? How did I get from that to that? And it was, I would just cry and cry and cry. And one day I was on Instagram, and Stephen Furtick, he's a preacher. And I just clicked on one of his Instagrams, and it was something about faith. I can't remember, but it was, and I've always been a Christian. My walk with faith has always been strong, but it was like, I was believing what this man said over what God said. And so that really touched me. So the next morning, I would intentionally, like, 'cause I feel like whenever you want to get from point A to point B, you have to change everything with intention. My mindset was like, it's just like how I shed 300 pounds, not 300 pounds, but going from 300 pounds to 245, it was intention. So in that moment, I intentionally stepped into the presence of the Lord every single day. And obviously, not obviously, it's probably bad to say that, but I don't always feel like it. Like, I didn't always feel like, oh, God, be with, like, but I knew that I needed to become somebody different because this was not Norris. I've never been that person. So every single morning, I would intentionally step in to his presence to see, what does God say about my situation? I keep listening to this coach that's known me for 3 months. What does God have to say about it? And I was reassured in a way that has changed my life. who I am, who he made me to be, is much greater than what any man that just met me or anybody else has to say about me. My thought process, my pattern for my life, my routine for my life, my planning for my life is not always how God's going to do it. Sometimes God's going to do it in a different way to make you become that person, to make you become who you need to be in the next stage of your life. You're learning those traits right now to become greater later. And that time really made me stronger in my mind. I started to beat that bully down by his word, his promises over the lies, staying true to myself, staying true to what the word says. And it's not even a preachy moment. It was just a patience moment. I say all this to say that changed my life. I went from popping pills for a day, broken, battered spirit, to happy as ever without a job, so to speak. But I'm happy because I know who I am again. I know what I bring to the table. I know the type of player I am. I know the type of person I bring to other people. And it's just strengthening me. And it's like God's hands was wrapped around me 24/7. It's like I felt it. It's the most out of body experience I've ever felt in my life, because without family, without friends, I was alone. I felt alone. I made this in my mind. It's like God isolated me from my family, my friends, because he wanted to connect with me in a greater way that I see differently possible. And that was my journey in Germany. I say this to say, when everything you're going through and everything in life, for me as a Christian, I would say faith is patience. I had to be patient in that moment. I had to be patient and work on what and wait on the Lord. But patience is confidence. You waiting on the Lord is building back up, reassuring you that, oh, he got my back. He got it. He got me under control. But patience isn't just waiting on the Lord. It's actually working on your process while you're waiting. So I was still shadow boxing. I was still dribbling the ball. I was still form shooting in the ways that I could to get me to where I needed to be. But I was putting that on the Lord. I'm like, I give my all to you. I'm reassured through your word. I make myself vulnerable before you because your hand, I see your hand in everything that I do, Lord. And that was making me a bigger and better person. And that confidence, again, is powered by faith. So it's almost like a cycle. Think of it. Faith is patience. Patience is confidence. Confidence is powered by faith. And I would say that to anybody who's going through a different time in their life that they've never experienced, and they're letting that louder voice, that negative voice, be the loudest voice in their head, I would say pause. Because faith is patience. Be patient. Give yourself some credit. You're not what they say you are. You're who God says you are. You're greater than that moment you're in. Or that moment that you're in is making you bigger and better for the next moment in your life. So whenever you have a broad worldview or a broad view of the end is in mind, this isn't the end. What are you learning from this moment to get you to that end? And if you stay patient, you become confident. And that confident mind beats that bully in your head. So I would say faith is patience. Patience is confidence. And confidence is powered by faith. And that was my kind of spiel on my last year. Sorry if I was rambling, but it was just big on my heart to show that or to be vulnerable for you guys on this first very podcast, because I believe that would bring value to somebody, because I think that just brought me value. It helped me just now. So this is the type of vulnerability you're going to get from this podcast. It's not going to always be serious like that, because that's not who I am. I'm a goofy, fun-loving guy that loves to, you know, talk about life. But I believe that there's certain things, the most meaningful conversations in my life sometimes are serious, are real life-based, are they have something at the end. They have some meat to it. So it's almost to put a pin in that conversation. Even when you don't have tangible evidence of prospering or tangible evidence of, hey, I became this, I won this award, I think that tangible evidence is who you've become through that process. You feel it. You don't need no award. You don't need no chip to say, hey, I'm better today. Because you know you're better today. You know you're bigger and better than who you once were. So again, I'm not always going to keep rambling like this. But nah, I would say this is the real me. This is what you're going to get out of this Mind Bully podcast. Mind Bully to me is also positivity can beat the bully. Laugh and love. I love music. I'm definitely going to talk about some music on here because I'm actually shooting this on the day the CLB drop. When y'all listen to this, CLB better be playing in y'all phone because I know Drake going to go stupid. I know he's going to go stupid, but nah, I appreciate y'all so much for listening to this podcast. It's a breath of fresh air to just talk and speak and share my heart with you guys. So I appreciate you tuning in. Mind Bully.